Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Coming up on 2 minutes past the hour here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Bicod, Virginia, the home studios of America's liberal voice, the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Monday, and it's time to get to it again. And we begin this Monday, I don't know about you, but me, I'm in a somber mood. Because we lost someone, we know exactly where he is. We had someone die today who, frankly, had a lot more impact on me than Jim Russert could ever hope to have had, and frankly was far more moral and in many ways a far more decent human being than Tim Russert will ever be, or Ronald Reagan, or Richard Nixon, or any of the other hateful old freaks that we have in the last decade or so had massive public eulogies over. There will be some words said here and there about George Carlin, but not nearly enough, and but not nearly enough words, and not by nearly enough people. George Carlin transformed the culture. George Carlin transformed the culture at the same time that he made many of us laugh to the point of just about wetting ourselves. George Carlin transformed my attitude as a 12, 13, 14-year-old. A couple of George Carlin 8-track tapes changed the way I looked at the world. It was George Carlin that I first heard say, "Religion is like a lift in your shoes. If it's good for you, fine. But let's not go nailing lifts onto the feet of the natives." George Carlin taught me to question authority. George Carlin taught me to laugh at the people who take themselves so earnestly and seriously. George Carlin flew along on a trajectory that was established by people like Mark Twain, extended by folks like Will Rogers and made manifest in George Carlin, in Lenny Bruce, in Richard Pryor, and then later the next step taken by another great man who's been gone some many years now, Bill Hicks. George Carlin died last night of heart failure at a hospital somewhere in Los Angeles. He was 71 years old. And he was so much more to this country. He was this country's, in many ways, it's almost a conscience. A man unafraid to say words that America was half terrified to hear, but to do it while making America chuckle and laugh. All the obituaries that I have read since arising this morning have pointed out the sad that George Carlin, who first introduced America to the seven words you cannot say on television, as if that was all there was to the man. George Carlin traveled the American life. George Carlin had coke problems. George Carlin smoked dope. George Carlin drank. And George Carlin cleaned up toward the end of his life. And he was no less funny hosting Saturday Night Live in its premiere in 1975 than he was in his latest HBO special. Flying Spaghetti Monster, bless him. Our friends at American Atheists issued a release on George Carlin's passing. Our buddy Larry sent this along. George Carlin, acerbic and insightful social critic and comedian, died Sunday at age 71. Carlin was especially famous for his seven words you can never say on television routine and his edgy style of witty commentary that made him one of the nation's funniest and most controversial performers. But for a growing segment of the American population, the 13% of godless Americans who profess no religious beliefs, Carlin was especially heroic. George Carlin was an atheist who often eviscerated religious dogmatism in his special humorous style of religion. He said when it, well, we'll play that in a minute. Frank Zindler, acting president of American Atheists, said that Carlin will be especially missed by atheists, freethinkers, and even open-minded religious believers. Carlin took on all of the religious shibboleths of our age in a way that made people laugh and think at the same time. We've lost a great comedian and a wonderful human being. And I agree. And, of course, that is the distinction. Was George Carlin a comedian or was he a humorist? I would say he was a humorist, in the same way that Mark Twain was a humorist. George Carlin was slated to receive the Mark Twain Prize in December. He did not live to see it presented, but he already knew that he had won the award. And that's a pretty spiffy award in my book. 'Cause see, the difference between a humorist and a comedian, at least as I view it, is that a humorist looks at life and turns it on its side so that it makes funny, while it makes you think. A comedian, on the other hand, stands up night after night and says, "Take my wife, please." Did I tell you the one about Kansas City and the duck? That was not George Carlin. I can't imagine there was ever a rim shot done at a George Carlin remark, because he had us entirely too busy thinking. So let's start with the obligatory George Carlin, that for which most of America is being, it's sort of like Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King, who wrote the I Have a Dream speech, as if that was all there was to it. George Carlin was so much more than the seven dirty words you cannot say on television. So very much more. But this did go all the way to the Supreme Court, and for that reason, it does deserve some notice. So let's start. Just appreciate for a moment the way he puts his topic in front of his audience and the way he makes something that is very thought-provoking really quite funny.
I love words. I thank you for hearing my words. I want to tell you something about words that I I think is important. I love, as I say, they're my work, they're my play, they're my passion. Words are all we have, really. We have thoughts, but thoughts are fluid, you know.
How does he know what the inside of my brain sounds like?
A word to a thought, and we're stuck with that word for that thought. So be careful with words. I like to think, yeah, the same words, you know, that hurt can heal. It's a matter of how you pick them. There are some people that aren't into all the words. There are some people that would have you not use certain words.
Now bear in mind, even today, as George Carlin lies dead, no one on government television or government radio, government-censored television or government-censored radio, terrestrial radio, terrestrial television, no one can say these words. That's why I'm playing them. So a little warning in advance, if little Timmy and little Susie are in the room and you don't want them to hear these seven heinous words, words that in my book are not nearly as dangerous as things like bomb or kill or maim or slaughter or genocide or my particularly most loathed phrase, collateral damage. You don't want little Timmy and little Cindy, little Susie to hear this. Shoo them out of the room and we'll be done in a little bit. But George Carlin spoke the same English that you and I speak, and that in front of our children we try to pretend that we don't, and that we threaten to wash their mouth out with soap if they do. So out of the room, babies. Out of the room. Grown-up talk. Here we go.
Yeah, there are 400,000 words in the English language, and there are seven of them you can't say on television. What a ratio that is. 399,993 to 7. They must really be bad. They'd have to be outrageous to be separated from a group that large. All of you over here, you seven. Bad word. That's what they told us they were, remember? That's a bad word. No bad words. Bad thoughts. Bad intentions. And words. You know the seven, don't you, that you can't say on television? Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. Huh? Those are the heavy seven. Those are the ones that'll infect your soul, curve your spine, and keep the country from winning the war. Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. Wow. And tits doesn't even belong on the list, you know?
Oh, Flying Spaghetti Monster, bless him, or nothing bless him, or something bless him. Can you imagine Tim, you know, just because he's recently gone, can you imagine Tim Russert? Tim Russert would, if he was sitting on the at the news desk of Meet the Press and had lived to remark on this, with a gun to his head, would not have said those words. Because Tim Russert was a gatekeeper for government-censored, government-controlled, corporatized, public airwaves. He would have turned red. He would have turned redder than he already was, and if he hadn't been felled by what felled him a couple of weeks ago, it would have killed him to say that in front of a camera, because he did not have the courage of George Carlin. So you know the words. It's still not safe to bring little Timmy and little Susie back into the room, because there's some truth to be dealt with here. Among other things, he skewered religion. And this is a beautiful moment. This is what our friends at American Atheists were referring to in their press release, and it deserves to be said. If only I can run the thing right. Too many knobs, too many buttons.
In the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit. You have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
You know, there's a reason you never saw George Carlin on the same dais with the Pope. And I don't think it's because the Pope was holier than George Carlin. I think it's because the Pope or Jerry Falwell, let's not be religion specific here, or the Grand Mufti Ayatollah Huzus Wahatmi, or any other practitioner of religion could not stand the analysis, the cold, rational analysis that George Carlin brought to religion. All-powerful, all-seeing, all-knowing, can't handle money. And I'm reminded of that anecdote about the preacher who said, you know, every Sunday I take all the collections and I put them in a hat. And I say, God, I'm going to throw all this money up in the air. You keep what you need. I'll pick up whatever you let fall to the earth. Yeah. Yeah. In a way, though, there's a certain irony because maybe George realized that it was safe to move on now. I say that because of a story coming out of England. An Orthodox Jewish organization called Aish has surveyed folks in England, and a third, just slightly more than a third of the people there, I don't know how News Ninja Gene finds these stories, but God, I'd be lost without him. Just slightly over a third of Britons feel pretty sure that Christianity and Judaism will be gone. A third of people thought religions like Christianity and Judaism would still be practiced in Britain in 100 years' time. 4 in 10 of those surveyed said they would choose to be a member of the Christian religion, but almost the same number said they'd just as soon not have any religion at all, that they were doing pretty good being decent human beings without all the mumbo-jumbo and threatening BS. Buddhism, not surprisingly, Buddhism came out ahead of both Islam and Judaism and was chosen by 9% of those being questioned. Maybe George Carlin knew that it was safe to move on. Maybe George Carlin, if not in his mind, in whatever we call the spirit or whatever, however you want to refer to it, soul, if you will, maybe George Carlin sensed that in the midst of all the other miserable crap that the human race is propagating, that we might finally be beginning to get over the religious superstition and BS that has kept us blinded and in the dark for, yea, verily, these decades upon centuries upon millennia upon damn near geologic epochs. The UK executive director, Rabbi Naftali Schiff of Aish, said it clearly demonstrates that religion, including Judaism, is becoming unattractive to the British public. Then he got his pitch in. At Aish, we know that Judaism provides real meaning and enrichment to one's life. Whilst we have attracted many disinterested Jews back to the Jewish identity, it is clear there is much work to be done. This, of course, is the sort of bigoted suggestion that one cannot have meaning in one's life without religion, which has been proven time and time again to be perhaps right behind the great big bearded man in the sky, the biggest lie that religion perpetrates. That of its it can't convey anything else. It can't make you bigger, taller, stronger, healthier. It can't make you anything, so it provides you with meaning. Yeah, that's the ticket. It gives meaning to your life, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe we're just sort of doing an early prayer meeting edition this Monday because of, you can't talk about George Carlin without talking about the fact that he put the wood to religion. Interesting to note that in the religion department, the Church of England has officially schismed. I don't know if you have to clean up schism with a towel or what, but hardline church leaders have formally declared the end of the worldwide Anglican Communion, saying they can no longer be associated in a church with liberals who tolerate Homer sectional clergy persons. It's bad enough. Well, it's bad enough when they wanted to bring the women in, after all. Everything, you know, every time we men get together, some woman wants in, and then we have to stop farting and scratching ourselves in peace and quiet and behave like civilized human beings. And now they want to let the homosexuals in? I think not. I should rather have a schism. The traditionalists, traditionalists, kiss my butt. The traditionalists with their traditions of bigotry and hatred and fear and ignorance and superstition and crackers that turn into human meat in the belly and flying creatures flying that don't fly and dinosaurs that were planted in the bedrock as a temptation from Satan to confuse the unbelievers and the creationism and 5,000-year-old earth and 6,000-year-old recipes for bread and beer. They dealt a serious blow to the Archbishop of Canterbury by claiming he can no longer hold the church together. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. They warned. Warned. What are they going to do? Send a Bible bomb? They warned that the church is gripped by its most serious crisis since the Reformation. Yeah. This is the most serious crisis. Gay men and women who want to say the magic BS words in front of the crowd that's simple and gullible enough to believe the magic BS words are the most dangerous threat to organized religion since the Reformation, when Martin Luther went and nailed his gripes to the door of the cathedral or whatever. Yeah, that sounds like danger to me. Gee, I'd think the proliferation of warfare and the blind eye that so many churches turn to starvation and death and damnation and hell and suffering in places like Darfur and then turning their backs and ignoring the genocide that went on in Rwanda and you know, the Roman Catholic Church that won't let African men put a little latex thingy on their Johnsons so that they won't die from having sex or maybe create a baby with a terminal illness the minute it comes out of the womb. I think that might be, you know, a real crisis of the faith. But no, it turns out that it's a guy who likes to have sex with guys who wants to say the magic words over the magic wine with the magic cracker in front of the credulous, superstitious people who believe in his BS. That's the crisis. Holy crap. And you wonder why I can't take these people seriously? Mother McCree. But yeah, George, you're right. Religion is. It certainly is. And lest we think that he was focused on anything in particular like religion, George Carlin also didn't think much of government. And in an appearance on Countdown with Keith Olbermann, he laid it out probably in more pure, unvarnished, and unfly-blown fashion than any pundit or talking head or Russert or Tweedy or, for that matter, any Carville or Begala. It was a beautiful thing to hear.
We're back there. How did we get back to the same position that we were when you made that joke originally in the 70s?
You're talking about wiretapping and spying on people. Yeah. Well, I don't know that we ever really left. See, I don't think that Frank Church Committee really did any good. I don't think all of these reforms. I think power does what it wants. Power does what it wants. And now they're just more naked about it. Now they just put it right out front and say, this is what we're doing to you folks. It's, you know, this country's finished. It's been sliding downhill a long time. And everybody's got a cell phone that makes pancakes, so they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to make any trouble. People have been bought off by gizmos and toys in this country, and no one questions things anymore. Seriously, that's what I love about your show. I mean, you bring the thing right to them, and that's the only way to do it.
If you got the platform and you're not doing something with it, you might as well have a trained monkey out here. You know. Yeah. The one and only George Carlin. The retrospective is called George Carlin, All My Stuff on DVD. Go buy it.
Hold on a minute. Let that last come along.
I think power does what it wants. Power does what it wants. And now they're just more naked about it. Now they just put it right out front and say, this is what we're doing to you folks. It's, you know, this country's finished. It's been sliding downhill a long time. And everybody's got a cell phone that makes pancakes, so they don't want to rock the boat.
And everybody has a cell phone that makes pancakes, so they don't want to rock the boat. I got something that goes with that, actually. And it's amazing. It always amazes me the way things sort of pull together. I had a story earlier today that was lost, but it pointed out that there is a great controversy in the world today, not over the response to a ferry that sinks in the Philippines and kills 800 people. No. Not in response to thousands, if not millions, dead from an earthquake in China. No. Not over the continuing crisis that followed the cyclone in Burma. No, not that either, sorry. Not over the starvation in Darfur, or the fact that there is now a statistic out that says just about every single Darfurian refugee who happens to be female has been raped. No, not that either. No. Now, it's a story about swimsuits. Yeah, swimsuits. There is an absolute firestorm of controversy, yea, verily, over this new swimsuit that is out by Speedo. And the statistics tend to indicate it's up to 2% better performance in your average competitive swimmer. And frankly, You could paint on a little bit of latex body paint, and there wouldn't be a lot of difference. I mean, frankly, there was a picture of a guy, and this isn't about, I mean, it's just me, but I saw the picture of the guy wearing his fancy schmancy Speedo swimsuit that people are breaching contracts and having hissies to get their hands on before they go over to Beijing to compete in front of the hoi polloi there, and the noble Turks and grandees and muckety mucks, you know, the people who put down the official orders that keep 12-year-olds chained to sewing tables so they can make more of those cell phones that George Carlin was talking about that make pancakes so everybody here will sit down and shut the up and not do anything. Yeah, they're having a hissy over swimsuits, and it turns out that swimwear is a 14 or something like that billion-dollar a year industry. No, really. And this the picture of this thing has the guy in it. And, you know, I'm thinking aerodynamically it wasn't the right way to wear it because it's a guess your religion swimsuit, too. And danged if that thing wasn't pointed up at his belly button. And, you know, you can't not notice this. Gay or straight, you just go, well, damn, yeah. Christian, no. Jewish, no. You'd think you'd want to tuck that thing away before you go swimming, but, you know, who am I? I don't swim. I swim like a rock. But, yeah, people are having an absolute hissy over it, and it's $14 billion a year in swimsuits. Yeah. Kind of makes you a little bit sick. But that's okay. The Anglican Church is schisming all over itself. Some guy that likes guys or woman that likes women wants to, you know, say the magic words. You know, I'd take religion more seriously if when they said the magic words, the duck would drop down like it used to on the old Groucho Marx program, You Bet Your Life. But, you know, with religion, you don't even get the flying duck. An email rolling in from Reese. Everybody's mourning George Carlin, people that I thought would never think to shed a tear. I don't think much else needs to be said other than a statement by Jon Stewart during the 40 years in comedy HBO Carlin tribute special almost 10 years ago. He is a part of our Holy Trinity. Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, George Carlin. The rest of us are just congregation. And isn't that the truth? But there is one last thing, and it was a beautiful comment, and it was made recently enough that this guy was 71 years old when he checked out, but he was still as hip as he ever had been. He was, in fact, George Carlin, a modern man.
Thank you. I'm a modern man, a man for the millennium, digital and smoke-free, a diversified multicultural postmodern deconstructionist, politically, anatomically, and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded, I've been inputted and outsourced, I know the upside of downsizing, I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm new wave, but I'm old school, and my inner child is outward bound. I'm a hot-wired, heat-seeking, warm-hearted, cool customer, voice-activated and biodegradable. I interface with my database. My database is in cyberspace, so I'm interactive, I'm hyperactive, and from time to time, I'm radioactive. Behind the eight ball, ahead of the curve, riding the wave, dodging the bullet, pushing the envelope. I'm on point, on task, on message, and off drugs. I got no need for coke and speed. I got no urge to binge and purge. I'm in the moment, on the edge, over the top, but under the radar. A high-concept, low-profile, medium-range ballistic missionary. A streetwise smart bomb. A top gun bottom feeder. I wear power ties. I tell power lies. I take power naps. I run victory laps. I'm a totally ongoing Bigfoot slam dunk rainmaker with a proactive outreach. A raging workaholic. A working rageaholic. Out of rehab and in denial. I got a personal trainer, a personal shopper, a personal assistant, and a personal agenda. You can't shut me up. You can't dumb me down because I'm tireless and I'm wireless. I'm an alpha male on beta blockers. I'm a non-believer and an overachiever. Laid back, but fashion forward. Up front, down home, low rent, high maintenance. Supersized, long-lasting, high-definition, fast-acting, oven-ready, and built to last. I'm a hands-on, foot-loose, knee-jerk head case. Prematurely post-traumatic, and I have a love child who sends me hate mail. But I'm feeling, I'm caring, I'm healing, I'm sharing. A supportive, bonding, nurturing primary caregiver. My output is down, but my income is up. I take a short position on the long bond, and my revenue stream has its own cash flow. I read junk mail, I eat junk food, I buy junk bonds, I watch trash sports. I'm gender-specific, capital-intensive, user-friendly, and lactose-intolerant. I like rough sex. I like rough sex. I like tough love. I use the F word in my email, and the software on my hard drive is hardcore, no soft porn. I bought a microwave at a mini mall. I bought a minivan at a megastore. I eat fast food in the slow lane. I'm toll-free, bite-sized, ready-to-wear, and I come in all sizes. A fully equipped, factory-authorized, hospital-tested, clinically proven, scientifically formulated medical miracle. I've been pre-washed, pre-cooked, pre-heated, pre-screened, pre-approved, pre-packaged, post-dated, freeze-dried, double-wrapped, vacuum-packed, and I have an unlimited broadband capacity. I'm a rude dude, but I'm the real deal. Lean and mean, cocked, locked, and ready to rock. Rough, tough, and hard to bluff. I take it slow. I go with the flow. I ride with the tide. I got glide in my stride. Driving and moving, sailing and spinning, jiving and grooving, wailing and winning. I don't snooze, so I don't lose. I keep the pedal to the metal and the rubber on the road. I party hardy, and lunchtime is crunch time. I'm hanging in, there ain't no doubt, and I'm hanging tough, over and out.
Thank you. Yeah, over and out, George. Over and out. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Go!
By request, Norman Greenbaum and Spirit in the Sky. Yeah, a fitting way to say goodbye to George, who hated his name. He said, "You be my name, and I'll be me. People will ask for you, and they'll get me. G-E-O-R-G-E-O-R-G-E-O-R-G-E-O-R-G-E-O-R-G-E. The name that never ends, and a legacy that likely will not as well. To the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, I'm mourning, too.
I refuse to mourn on this one.
Well,
he did too much good.
I should say I'm remembering.
Yeah, okay. Remembering's good.
One of my favorite memories is, it's actually up on YouTube. I posted the link. And when we get the site completely back up, I'll post the video. It's a very short routine that Carlin did on Johnny Carson. In 1966, of all times, in a tie.
Oh, yeah. He started out very, very buttoned down. In fact, he listed as his earliest inspirations, among others, Bob Newhart.
Yeah. And he was doing the Hippy Dippy Weatherman. Now, the thing that made this memorable...
Al Sleet.
Yeah. Was the way he would take, you know, a perfectly innocuous routine like Al and then toss in a total zinger. Because right at the end of this routine, and it just absolutely killed Carson and me and everybody in the audience, was, you know, here was Al doing the, he was reciting the list of thunderstorms on the radar, da, 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 da. And he says, but there's also a line of Russian ICBMs coming in over the poles, so I wouldn't sweat the thunderstorms. You know, and it just killed everybody.
Gallows humor, yeah. And that was...
You're a genius.
Well, he was. I think what Reese said in his email was right. George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, Holy Trinity.
Yeah. And I get given the choice, I preferred Carlin of all of them.
I don't know. It's a tough run for me between him and Richard. Lenny sort of predates me, so I didn't get the full impact of him. But Richard Pryor and George Carlin, they defined comedy for me as a teenager. You know, the kind of stuff where you got to turn the 8-track tape player down, or mom and dad will hear it and they'll know, and then they'll take it away. And yeah, or you, you know, or Friday.
Yeah, and you know, and then there's Carlin had that that working class background. You know that we all grew up with the, I should say, that working class white kid background. You know, the bit he did with the confessional, Father Rivera.
No, I don't remember that one.
Oh, God, that's funny. He was known as an easy confessional. You could see the line move.
Well, he...
I don't have anything like Carlin's delivery. It's up on YouTube, just... run up there and look at it, and you'll laugh till you cry.
Well, if there was somebody that would be, well, there's no doubt he would be probably embarrassed as all heck by a 2-week eulogy, but he sure deserves it more. You know, they flew the flag at half mast for Tim Russert and gave him a military honor guard.
Yeah, I know, and that's stupid.
Stupid? It's offensive. They gave a military honor guard to a guy who helped get 4,100-plus young American men and women killed.
Well, the only thing I could think of was they didn't give this much coverage to Bobby Kennedy.
That's because there was no 24-hour news cycle then. But, no, you're right. And, frankly, Jimmy Carter, when he goes to his long home and his reward, will be lucky if he gets a 5-minute mention somewhere between the latest Britney update and the latest Paris Hilton update. And if the Republicans have their way, he'll be stuffed in a 55 gallon drum and floated out to sea and drowned. You know, yeah, because only Repiglicans and Repiglican enablers like Tim Russert get the week long eulogies.
Yeah, and if anybody deserves a state funeral, it's that man. Because if we had followed his policies, we would not be.
We wouldn't be paying no 410 a gallon for gasoline, or even if we were, it wouldn't matter. Yeah, I know. And you know where George Carlin is concerned, he made it okay to laugh at people like Richard Nixon. And Richard Nixon, Richard Nixon was not nearly as bothered by being hated as he was by being laughed at.
Exactly.
Well, if you say those seven words, we'll lose the war.
Yeah, and that's the thing that that George Carlin taught us, is the best way to handle these Republicans is laugh at them. They cannot tolerate that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening.
You too.
And we'll be talking soon.
Okay. Right. Love to end this.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Well, shoot. Coffee breaks over. Back on your heads. We go to Kalamazoo, Michigan. We go to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and a juvenile detention facility there. This is tough. The audio is poor. I'm going to restart it. A young man, 14 years old, was arrested and was brought into the facility and apparently was not being obsequious enough to the officer in question. I don't know if you've seen this story or not, but this ranks up there with horrors with the little baby who was watched being stomped to death in rural California. It goes without saying that the young 14-year-old man was guilty of LWB, living while black. And what you'll see in the video that came from the Kalamazoo Police Department after they were forced to turn it over in a Freedom of Information Act request, this is only the audio, because this is only audio. What you'll see is the young man being led down the hall, and I guess he says one word too many to his skinhead white jailer, who promptly slams with all of his bodily force the young man's head into a concrete wall. This is the sound of justice in America. He's having a hard time. He's having a hard time speaking, the young man is, because three teeth have just been knocked out of his mouth when his head was slammed into the wall. He has a head injury, most likely a concussion. Undoubtedly a concussion. You can't not have a concussion after having a man nearly twice your size, a skinhead white man, with all the authority of a badge and a gun and a uniform, slam your head into a concrete wall. You know, it's a little bit like what goes on at Guantanamo. It has now been determined that Guantanamo has served to take men who might have been thugs, men who might have been less than savory in their home countries, be they the border area of Pakistan or Afghanistan or Iraq, but who were not Muslim fanatics, and by, you know, hanging them out in Guantanamo for a while, turning them into Muslim fanatics who were hell-bent on revenge. That's what the concentration camp is at Guantanamo Bay, you see. It's a revenge factory. And while this young man is not going to be beaten into servile submission to white authority in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Oh, hell no. No, no. What's going to happen is this young man has been, in the words of dear leader and his administration, he has been radicalized. Yeah, he's been radicalized. Go ahead, listen a little bit more. Why did you pull away from me? Pull away. He had his head slammed into a wall and three teeth broken out of his head for not walking appropriately. No, really. And you should have seen, you should see the comments if you find the right one. It's in a couple of places on YouTube. You should see the comments. Lots of the racism just boiling out. Ha, 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 ha. Roll on floor laughing. Raffle owned N-word. Yeah, really. Is that a little bit of what George Carlin was talking about when he said, this country is done, this country is finished? You think? Is it? This young man hadn't been tried for anything. The young man had not been, the young man had not been convicted of anything. He had not been sentenced for anything. He was cuffed, and he was being dragged down a hallway when the administrator of justice, in the form of a prison guard, crammed his head into a concrete wall. Now, just for the sake of follow-up, you should know, first of all, that the Kalamazoo Gazette headlined it, Teen Pushed into Wall on Police Video. He was pushed, yes. Just pushed. I mean, the officer didn't grab him bodily and slam him head first into a concrete wall, knocking out three teeth, giving him a concussion and so on. No. And in a moment, remember, if there is a God, he is a God of irony. The officer, the skinhead, who slammed the young man into a wall, is named Derek, oh, come on, Michigan, remember? Derek Nugent. As the Kalamazoo paper says, the view from the hallway camera shows the teen entering the hallway, accompanied by two public safety officers. The video is shaky and much of the audio is unintelligible, but it's clear the teen is yelling at the officers, one of whom repeatedly tells him, face the wall. Well, yeah, here in Bushmerica, when a 14-year-old African-American male does not face the wall when he is told to face the wall, the appropriate punishment is to give him a concussion and knock out three of his teeth. The teen shouts profanity and is eventually turned toward the wall as an officer appears to hold him by the back of his neck. About 2 minutes into the video, Nugent begins walking the teen down the hallway toward a booking room when a tussle occurs and the teenager appears to jerk away from Nugent. Nugent then pushes the teen into the cinder block wall. The skinhead with a badge and a uniform and a club and so forth, drags the young man, whose knees are on the floor, into the adjacent booking room where a second camera continues to record the incident. Writhing in agony on the floor, the young man repeatedly says, "You broke my teeth." Although it doesn't quite sound like that with the teeth not in your, you know. The arrest was, the young man's arrest was for violating rules at the Kalamazoo Transportation Center. The teen twice spit on the ground and then failed to pay when he boarded a bus. For that, you get slammed into a wall and three teeth broken out and a concussion. This is a kid who has problems. 20 misdemeanor and felony charges brought against him since 2005. But he wasn't prosecuted because judges determined he was mentally incompetent to stand trial. He's not home. An official for Kalamazoo, Michigan, said he did not believe Nugent intended to harm the teenager. But he said the officer's actions would not be condoned and gave him a 10-day unpaid suspension. No, really, a 10-day unpaid suspension. Now, of course, were the shoe on the other foot, it would be an entirely different matter. Had a non-badge-wearing, non-uniform-wearing, non-club-wielding private citizen who happened to be of the wrong skin color slammed a white skinhead's head into the wall, breaking three teeth, he would be facing probably 10, 15, 20 years in the big house in Jackson, Michigan. Readers of the Kalamazoo newspaper, where they describe kids being slammed into walls as a tussle, have said, "Sorry, but no sympathy for me. All I can see is another out-of-control punk teenager." Another one said, I say prosecute the kid for resisting arrest and give Nugent the key to the city for a day for shutting that punk up. Yeah. Really.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, work for all my life, then I'd have to start again. Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. Does the flag still stand for freedom? If they can't take that away.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, Detroit down to Houston, and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her till today. So there ain't no doubt I love this man. God bless the USA.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I've heard that more times than you have, probably. And I'm still not okay with it. I can't make it okay. There would be something desperately wrong with me if that was okay.
All I see is an out-of-control punk teenager. I ought to give that officer the key to the city. Hell yeah!
The young man was not mentally competent to stand trial. He had a guardian. He had no parents. Instead, he gets his parenting in the form of a blue-suited thug who slammed his head into a wall and will not see the inside of a prison for doing it. How do you look at America? What do you say about America? My forebears fought and bled and died for all this. Did Derek Nugent not spit on the memory of every person who thought that they were fighting for something worth saving in this country? Yes, he did. The young man needs help. Now he needs more help than he needed before. There's probably not much left to own in Kalamazoo, Michigan's troubles being Michigan's troubles. But Lord knows that young man deserves to own it. But this is the police state. This is America with three Ks. And that man, that corrections officer, that juvenile detention officer, there will be hardly a question asked over what he did to the young man.
And it's particularly interesting that the young man was noted to have been incompetent to stand trial. It's becoming a rarity in this country. Made more so in the past week by the Supreme Court of the United States. Insanity is a real problem in criminal trials, whether you know it or not. And the Supreme Court ruled in the last week that a criminal defendant, get out a little piece of paper for scratch paper or something for those of you keeping score at home. The Supreme Court ruled that a criminal defendant, can be held to be competent to stand trial at the same time that he is held incompetent to represent himself in court. That's right. You're not crazy enough for us not to try you, but you're too crazy to defend yourself. The case at bar was a demand for self-representation that Ahmad Edwards had made. Ahmad Edwards is schizophrenic. He was, however, found sane despite being schizophrenic. Dr. Rick Goodner, courtesy phone, horn psychologist Rick Goodner, courtesy phone. He was found to be sane for trial, but he was found to be incompetent to represent himself. Because, you see, if you were to, you know, sometimes, you know, we can't let the curtain get all pulled back on our criminal justice system, which is little more than miscreant management. The criminal justice system is, for the most part, designed to deal with poor people, ignorant people, and occasionally really, really evil people. On the other hand, a lot of the really, really evil people walk. The dumb, the stupid, the ignorant, the poor, the mentally challenged, they don't walk. And they go into our criminal university system, otherwise known as the prison industry. But the Supreme Court had to do this because you can't rule that a guy, what's a jury to do? The guy's been ruled competent to stand trial, to be tried by a jury of his peers on a charge of God knows what. And he wants to fire his lawyer and get up and represent himself before the jury and talk about the men of the race of men in the trees. And he's for tough legislation and, you know, all of that stuff. And tinfoil helmets and flashlights that talk to the CIA and the chip in his brain and all of that stuff. And, you know, how he gets secret messages from Planet Zorb every other word in the crossword puzzle or highlights for children or something. Because, see, if the jury saw him actually standing up and representing himself and being, I mean, but crazy, that might make the jury start asking some hard questions, like, why are we trying crazy people and trying to send crazy people to prison? So the Supreme Court split the baby, poorly. And ruled that, Stephen G. Oddly enough, my two least favorite justices, Scalia and Thomas, wrote the dissent. I'm sure that Justice Scalia was in favor of just taking the mentally deficient out and having them killed. He is, after all, the son of a fascist and a fascist himself. They're good at that, having the deficient killed. 6.5 million Jews and several million more of gypsies and homosexuals and liberals and communists were the proving ground for that in Hitler's Germany. But anyway, Stephen G. Breyer wrote the opinion and said that district courts could, and this is his quote, take realistic account of the particular defendant's mental capacities in making sure that they had no right to represent themselves. Incidentally, in ruling in such fashion, the court overturned the decision of the Indiana Supreme Court. Breyer insisted that district courts, quote, will often prove best able to make more fine-tuned mental capacity decisions tailored to the individual circumstances of a particular defendant. Sure could be embarrassing if the people that we've ruled to be sane enough to try were actually to be able to demonstrate to the jury the fact that they are crazier than a sprayed roach. I know I'm speaking somewhat ungently here, but I can't use, you know, challenged and special and all of that all the time. We're talking about crazy people. I mentioned the flashlights a little bit ago. I remember a guy wandered into the community, had people actually believing that he was going to buy land, and then he started talking to his flashlight and explained that that the chip in his brain received communications from the CIA satellite orbiting in geosynchronous orbit above the planet via the flashlight that he carried with him at all times, which then transmitted, you know, to the chip in his brain. He went on to explain to some of us that he had been sent there as a recruiter for the Fairfax County, Virginia Volunteer Fire Department and was there to find some fine young men who can be firefighters for the Fairfax County Volunteer Fire Department. He was, in a word, nuts! But, you know, according to this Supreme Court decision, if he had committed a crime, he would probably still be ruled competent to stand trial, but he would not be able to stand up in front of the jury and tell the jury about the chip in his head that he receives the signals from the flashlight that get the signals from the CIA satellite in geosynchronous orbit above the Earth while he's on his mission to recruit fine young men for the Fairfax County Volunteer Fire Department. Can't have the jury seeing that kind of nuttiness, because then the jury will get all confused. Lordy. And the same thing applies to the young man who got it. You know, some people, you know, it's like the Spanish, the Spanish priests wrote of the Native Americans that they found in Mexico during the conquista. These Indians hear only through their buttocks. In other words, what they need is a good whipping, a thorough beating. And then they'll do as they're told. What's changed? Nothing's much different. So instead of having a young juvenile who is obviously, you know, the court, and don't think that they didn't. I mean, you know, Kalamazoo is not that damn big. Don't think that Derek Nugent didn't know exactly who he was dealing with. 20 felony and misdemeanor charges, and they've all been, he's walked on all of them because he's too incompetent to stand trial. Derek Nugent was just going to administer a little rough justice. Get a rope! Oh, damn, we can't do that no more. Slam his head into the wall a few times there, Ed. That'll show him. Oh, Derek, you better do that yourself. Well, all right. Come here, boy. Wham! Justice. And bear in mind, it's made more convenient in the courts of this country because most of these people who are deemed competent to stand trial have a level of legal representation that is at best just slightly better than what they themselves would do because they've got some either pro bono lawyer who's overworked and underpaid, or an overworked and underpaid legal aid attorney who will not give him exactly what you would call a zealous defense. who will in fact go through the motions and make it look like a nice fair trial while his client sits there behaving himself and not rambling about flashlights or satellites or CIA or Fairfax County Volunteer or Fire Department. So, just take that into account. Don't think for a minute that this man didn't know what he was doing.
Face the wall!
Got anything on your agenda? You wanna share something with the rest of the world? You're more than welcome to. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's toll free. If you want to do it on your nickel instead, it's 304-658-3333. Either one works just fine. I did briefly mention my conversation Friday night, the story out of California. The story of the toddler between 1 and 2 years old stomped to death by the 27-year-old man who pulled his pickup truck over and punched and stomped the child to death in the middle of the road, in which several people attempted to stop him but for some reason were unable, until he was finally gunned down like the rabid dog in the street that he was by the authorities. Yeah, they administered on-the-spot justice, too. And this man might not have been competent to stand trial, because he was screaming about all the demons inside the child. Oh, dear, we're back to that again, aren't we?
Yep. Yeah. Little toddler had demons in him.
And anybody with any religious upbringing at all knows that there's only one way to get demons out of a toddler, and that's to stomp them out. Demons. Stomping. Yeah. And, you know, while we're at it, while we're on the subject, might as well go down the road with this one, too. We've got another dead child in Oregon. Child died from withheld medical care because of the deep and abiding religious faith of the parents. This is once again the Oregon Followers of Christ Church. Ava Worthington died. We talked about it. Ava Worthington's cousin is now dead. A 16-year-old boy, victim of religion. Jonathan Turley writes, it appears that the group again used the power of prayer to heal him, as they did with 15-month-old Ava Beagley. He had inflammation in it. God almighty. He had inflammation in a tube leading from his bladder, the urethra, that made him unable to urinate. And as a result, as he filled up with urine, he eventually destroyed his bladder and his kidneys, and his heart failed. Yep, all for God. He had a urinary tract infection. Anybody ever had one of those? They're painful as all hell, but they can be cured with not a lot of complication. Inflammation. And he died for it. 16 years old. Can you imagine the agony? He couldn't urinate. His bladder exploded, poisoning his insides. His kidneys failed. His body began taking on fluid. He blew up like a balloon, because that's what kidney failure does, and eventually it stopped his heart. Without glory, raise. And it's an open question. It's an open question as to whether the followers of the followers of Christ. That has a hard time coming out of my mouth. Honest to God, it does. It's an open question as to whether the followers of Christ who did this to this 16-year-old boy will even do jail time for it. Because some lawyer, yeah, I know. Some lawyer will stand there and, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the most sacred right we have in America is the right contained in the First Amendment to freedom of religion. And freedom of religion means that the government may not interfere. The government may not interfere with a Jehovah's Witness who withholds a blood transfusion from a child with a heart condition and that child dies. Our Supreme Court said that's all right. Because freedom of religion is more important than any child. Freedom of religion is our most sacred right, ladies and gentlemen. Do not engage in religious prosecution of these poor people who were doing nothing but trying to follow the teachings of their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I don't know how many people Oregon puts on a jury these days, 6, 12? And I'm not sure, but most states require a unanimous verdict in a criminal case. And all you need is one religious fanatic, one zealot. One! Not 12, one! On the jury to say, I will not persecute these people in the name of Jesus Christ. I will not. Boom. Hung jury. See ya! Go kill another kid! Died of an exploded bladder from something as simple as a urinary tract infection. Mama, I can't pee. Mama, it hurts. That's all right, son. We'll pray over you. Jesus, in the name of the Lord, you've told us, hallelujah, that if we call upon your name, touching one another and gathered in your spirit, that you will bring a healing. Bring a healing, Jesus, so that my son can go wee-wee. Better yet, boy? No, Mama, it hurts worse. Oh, glory to Jesus, we call upon you. We put our hands in the air for the power, to feel the power flowing through us into the bladder of this young man. Please, Lord, let him make water. Peeing yet, son? No, Mama, I think I need to go to the hospital. You can't go to the hospital, son. That there hospital is absolutely full of demons with their medicine. And their procedures, it's demonic, son. Suffer for Jesus' sake. Be a martyr, son. You think Jesus wasn't suffering when he felt them nails a-going through his hands? Don't you think he hurt a little bit worse than you do just because you can't go wee-wee, boy? Can't you suffer like Jesus did? Mama. Mama, why's my hands blowing up? Why's my feet so big, Mama? Because they're being filled with the healing blood of Christ Jesus, son. Mama, I just want to pee. Don't cry, son. Our Lord and Savior didn't cry out till he was near the end. Mama, don't you love me? Mama, won't you take me to the doctor? Please, Mama, take me to the doctor. I'm sick, Mama. The demons inside your body are the sickness, son, and we will pray them away. And they did. And they did. They prayed the demons away. They prayed the urethra away. They prayed the bladder away. They prayed the kidneys away. They prayed the heart away. And they prayed the young man away. And now, hallelujah, glory to God, he is in a better place. Amen and amen. He is no longer suffering in this veil of tears. He is in his true home. I can just hear it all coming out on the stand. Whew. And it's all, you know, it seems always to be the children. Children, it's the children they let die. The older people, not so much. But the children die. But while we're on children, it's worth remembering a guy named Randall Terry. Randall Terry, who runs about the country and has run about the country, founded Operation Rescue a while back, got his ass sued into the ground by the National Abortion Rights Action League or something. I think it was NARAL. And was then just turned around, filed bankruptcy, and denied NARAL its judgment against him, and went out and free agented. For some reason or other, I get Randall Terry's emails. Subject, 170 bishops receive gift bag at hotel. You'll rejoice and laugh. Hello, pro-life friend. We just got home from Orlando on our Florida trip. No, Randall did not go to Disney World. Hey, you've just saved several fetuses so that they could exist in a life of misery and poverty. What are you going to do now, Randall Terry? I'm going to Disney World! No. Many people have asked me how things went in Orlando at the Bishops' Conference. That would be the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Simply put, it went better than I could have planned or even imagined. Here's the story. A story of God's blessing and direction. You will be blessed and maybe amazed at God's providence. 170 bishops saw the ad, a letter from me, and got a copy of a humble plea delivered to their rooms. Yeah, Randall Terry wants you to know that while people are starving in Darfur, he's out there protecting the blastocysts. On Friday, June 13th, four of us prayed quietly outside of the hotel where the meeting of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops was taking place, asking God to grant the bishops courage and clarity in this upcoming election. Obama is a hardcore supporter of the murder of children and must be opposed by name, by bishops, priests, pastors, and ministry heads. As you may know, we took out an ad in the Orlando Sentinel called In Search of 12 Apostles. It ran on Friday, June 13th on page A6. Of course, we were not going to go inside the hotel or do any protesting that would be disrespectful of the bishops. But we also wanted the bishops to hear the message of this ad directly. As we were praying, an idea formed. We left the hotel and went to an office depot. We made a copy of this ad on fancy linen paper, and for the next 5 hours, I personalized a handwritten note on the ad copy to every bishop in America. My words were, "Dear Bishop, your name here. Please enjoy the autographed copy of my latest book, A Humble Plea." It has been heavily edited since the Baltimore meeting. What? He gave it out at the Baltimore meeting, too? Come on, write a new book, Randall. Gee whiz. This ad ran in the Orlando Sentinel. We are here to show our support for the bishops who have publicly addressed these issues. We are praying for more bishops to clearly and boldly lift up their voices during this critical election year. May God use you like a saint and martyr. to bring the curse of child killing to an end in America. In Christ's wounds kept, Randall A. Terry. He's only kept in Christ's wounds, mind you. He's not kept in the parts that the Romans didn't hurt. He's just kept in the wounds. Randall A. Terry, living right in that little hole in his hand where the M&Ms fall through. He's in the piercing in the side. He's in the holes in the feet. Oddly enough, Randall Terry is not in the brain of Jesus or the head or the heart. He's in the wounds where all the pain takes place. We then put this handwritten letter, the newspaper ad, and an autographed copy of a humble plea in a large, personalized envelope with no return address. You know, those are the kinds of envelopes you open up and white powder flies out. No return address, me no open. Apparently not in the religion industry, according to Randall Terry. We then put this handwritten letter, the newspaper ad, and an autographed copy of a humble plea in a large personalized envelope with no return address. Everyone will open a mystery envelope. Not me! I met with the hotel staff, explained who I was, showed them my book, and told them I wanted to give a copy to every bishop who was there. The hotel offered to hand-deliver them to every room for $2 each. Should have held out for $5. This guy's a real schmuck. He would have paid. So a couple of hotel bellhops worked all night and slipped the package under the door of every bishop in America who was checked into the hotel. Exactly 170 bishops got this gift package. Hallelujah. Praise. In addition, a dozen of them got the T-shirt. Well, there's T-shirts involved. What a lovely parting gift. In a lovely gift bag, the T-shirt was. The T-shirt says, "No vote, no communion, no compromise. In search of 12 apostles with apostolic courage and clarity." They placed the gift bags on the bishop's beds when they were out for dinner. This is getting creepier and creepier. I mean, this guy's like a bishop stalker. No, but he's got First Amendment protection, so we can't put him away. Picture a bishop coming back from dinner or getting up in the morning and seeing a lovely envelope slipped under his door or a gift bag on his bed. You know that every single one of them opened the items. Damn sure they did. There was an unmarked envelope, no return address. They're figuring it's probably a black and white glossy 8x10s of them with, you know, little Timmy. Now, for anyone who does not understand what a huge turn of events this was, let me spell it out for you. A bishop is a very busy man. Oh, yes, he is. He is busy. They are busy bishops. Busy little bishops. And has a large staff. Is that what they call it these days? A large staff, the bishop? Part of what the staff does is filter through things. Many letters, gifts, ideas, complaints never reach a bishop. He is shielded, some would say sheltered, from words and information he might find distasteful or troubling or challenging. Hence, for 170 bishops to be in one location and to open with their own hands. Hey, kid, come here. I got a Snickers for you. Open this. Sniff it. See any white powder in there? Jesus wants you to. With their own hands, a copy of my letter, the ad that ran in the paper, and an autographed copy of a humble plea was a huge providential blessing. You know, I'm just not reading this the same way Randall Terry does. This is just creepy to me. And because my note was handwritten and short and was on the same page of the ad, we can bet that most or all of them read the letter and the ad. Objection. The witness is speculating. Most of them would have never seen the letter, the ad, and received a humble plea under normal circumstances. This project could simply have not gone any better. Only God knows how many bishops will be equal to the rigors and battles of this election cycle. Only a handful thus far have lifted up their voices clearly and courageously. But God is in the business of converting... Yeah, God's in business, all right. God is in the business of converting human hearts. On the installment plan. What? There's rotating credit? What's the interest rate? What's the APR? What's the late fee? Any one of us can have a fresh conversion, including a bishop, that raises our heart to the next level of love and sacrifice for our fellow man and blastocyst. Please pray that this message to them bears fruit. In addition, I did interviews with several news outlets, including 58 radio stations across Florida. Oh, thank God you can't say the dirty words on Florida, but you can let a freak like Randall Terry on. Discussing the ad and why bishops have a unique duty to lift up their voices in opposition to candidates who support the slaughter of unborn children. It cost, here's why the email went out, okay? It cost us about $60 per bishop to reach them with this message. $60 a bishop. I got $60. Can I get 65? Do I hear 65? 65. I got 60. 60 going once, 60 going twice. $60 sold! Every bishop for $60 to the loony in the corner with the anti-abortion t-shirt. The total cost of the ad, the travel, the copies, and the other expenses of delivering this message was over $10,000! $10,000! The ad alone was $7,104. Every penny was well spent. Yeah. See, they spend the pennies really well. They spend the hundreds even better. I must tell you, when it came time to pay for the ad and travel to Orlando, Florida, we were still short about $5,000. I had to choose, abandon the whole project or go forward. True to my nature, I plunged ahead. I have a good friend who paid for the ad as a loan. As of today, I still owe him just over $4,000. So we have projects in front of us, but we need immediate help to get this bill paid. But it was worth it! All caps. I mean, that's what you have to do when it's all caps, right? You have to scream. But it was worth it! If you know how hard it is to get something into the hands of a bishop, well, it all depends on what you're trying to get into the hands of a bishop or a pastor or a priest. Some things get into their hands really, really easily. But never mind. If you know how hard it is to get something into the hand of a bishop or the pastor of a large congregation, having 170 bishops open this with their own hand, and their one hand, what, this was the conference of one-handed bishops? Oh, the other hand was busy, I'm sorry, is beyond our best hopes. It was worth all the time, travel, work, and money. In the bigger picture, what we did could have far-reaching consequences in the fight to end child killing! Would you please sponsor a bishop receiving this message? That's, you know, centered and larger typeface, bold. Would you please sponsor a bishop receiving this message? Yeah, never mind the child whose food, the one that's already on the ground, the one that's alive, the one that's suffering in the third world or some third world part of America that you were donating to a charity to feed. Screw them! Save the ones that are just multiple little wads of cells. Sponsor a bishop! Bishop to Kingsbrook 4. I promised my friend I would raise the money right away to pay him back for the ad. I've paid him $3,000. I owe him an additional $4,104. As I said, this is a long email, isn't it? As I said, it cost us about $60 each to reach the 170 bishops who were at the hotel in Florida on Friday evening. You know, they could have reached them a lot cheaper if they just had little boys carry the envelopes, but never mind. If you believe what we did has value, would you please help me retire this cost right away? Would you sponsor the cost of getting one copy, or two, or three, or a dozen, into the hands of these heirs of the apostles? Oh, mama. We have some big projects coming up this summer, and it's very difficult to raise money for the future while being nagged by the past. Neither a borrower nor a lender be... No, that was the Harold Hecuba production of Hamlet on Gilligan's Island, wasn't it? Please help if you can, and maybe forward this to a friend. Friend, we are going to have a very turbulent election cycle. Oh, I'm sorry. Friend, we are going to have a very turbulent election cycle! No matter who you're voting for, all pro-lifers can agree that to vote for Barack Obama is to betray innocent blood. I will spend my heart and soul begging bishops and evangelical pastors and ministry heads to boldly declare the truth. No one can in good conscience vote for a baby killer such as Obama! I hate this rotten bastard. Now, I'm so glad I don't do TV or something where they bring freaks like this in and sit them across the table from me for me to politely ask them questions. Because it would be Robert De Niro in the movie version of The Untouchables. You like baseball? I like baseball. Whack! And Randall Terry's little pumpkin head goes over on the table in a little pool of blood sprints. It just would. Just kidding. I need your help. Baby killer, such as Obama. Baby killer. Obama. Baby killer. Obama, baby killer. The nerve of him calling Barack Obama a baby killer when he supports a filthy, degenerate pig like George W. Bush, who has killed more little brown babies in Iraq than Carter has little liver pills. Babies in the womb, babies on the ground, babies in huts, babies in mosques, babies on the street, babies in the market, babies, 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 and Tomahawk cruise missiles, and rounds from M16s, and tank rounds, and smart laser-guided bombs. Ooh, smart bombs. They find the babies easy. They're smart. Click here to see the final ad that ran in the Orlando Sentinel on page A6. To contribute $60 for the cost of giving this ad, my letter, and a humble plea to 170 bishops, click the link to A Humble Plea. I hope to hear from you. Please keep us in your prayers. I've been offered a TV show. Oh, I didn't get... I thought I proofread this earlier. I didn't get to the TV show part. I've been offered a TV show, and I'm beginning the preparation now for the first 14 weeks of shows. I'll tell you more soon, Randall Terry. P.S. To help us sponsor a bishop, click here. The baby killer, Barack Obama. Randall Terry is going to have him a TV show. And he's going to hustle. He's going to hustle $60 donations over and over and over again, and he is going to ride, he's going to ride them bishops like a borrowed mule. And you know what? The faithful are going to make him rich again. Now that he's safely distant from the judgment that was entered against him and has been cleared by the bankruptcy court of it, the people who want to save the poor little fetuses, they're going to dig deep. They'll give till it hurts. I don't need no vacation next year, or this year neither. Brother Terry's out there fighting for the little ones against that baby killer Barack Obama. I gotta send the money. The Lord's Spirit is upon my heart. Oh, help me, Jesus. Help me make more money so I can send it to Brother Terry so he can save your little ones. Oh, God. Ye generation of vipers. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I was in and out when you were playing that about the boy in Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan, Kalamazoo.
Teenager.
Yeah.
What was his excuse? I found the story finally, but what was the officer's excuse?
He was resisting.
Huh?
He was resisting.
Oh. Oh, well. Doesn't resist someone like him.
No. Resisting, yeah. Resisting can get you bad hurt. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Cost this man. Yeah. Here's a young man who's incompetent and mentally challenged in the first place, and he gets a concussion. That's gonna help.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I tell you, Bob, it's something else. Things like that.
Yes, it is.
I do want to ask you a question about the McClellan hearing.
Right, sure, yeah.
I started watching it when it came on, and I didn't get to watch anything but the first part. You know, they broke away to do something else. They were coming back. And did you know I've been trying to listen to it on C-SPAN?
Mm-hmm.
And it will not play. I can play everything else on there, but it will not play that.
Well, that must mean there's a whole bunch of people hitting that server.
Is that what that means?
Quite frequently, yeah. Unless it comes up,
there's no
unless it comes up, it's a broken link or something like that. Yeah, that means there's so many people hitting the server that you just can't connect.
Well, it doesn't matter when I try. It just will not make any. It'll play if I push the thing over, you know, manually. It'll go into it, and you can see it, but the sound just will not come on.
Well,
I don't know.
If you wait and let the thrill die down a little bit, you'll probably be able to get to it.
Then they won't have it on anymore.
No, that's possible.
I want to give my report on the View and get it over with.
Well, don't put it that way. No, go ahead.
Well, I think it was very disappointing.
Was it really?
I don't know what else they could have done. Michelle, she was on there on the 6/18, and she walked out with Barbara Walters. She's very tall, and she said she was 5'10". She's got a really nice figure and a very nice-looking lady. And she got a standing ovation. And basically what they talked about was the newspaper article, you know, about her with an eye toward softening her image.
Uh-huh.
And then they did the bump. She explained to them what the fist bump was, her bump fist. It's the new high five. She said she got it from young people.
Oh, for heaven's sake, she had to explain that. Did she have to apologize for it, too?
She didn't apologize for that, but I don't know. It was all right, you know. But I thought it was pretty blah. And Elizabeth kept her mouth shut. But then that night, she went on Hannity and Combs, and she was talking about, this is the thing that she
Elizabeth did? Elizabeth did? Went on Hannity?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I didn't see it, but I saw what she said. She says this is what she tries to say over and over on The View, is that someone that goes 20 years and doesn't have the judgment to know what his pastor believes in, I just can't go along with that. I can't trust him to choose the right people. And that's basically what she's saying. She thinks that Hannity and Combs is a well-balanced show, serving the left and the right.
Yeah, right. Because because all the left deserves is a mush mouth little milk toast weasel like Alan Combs.
Yeah.
Sure, that's about as much balance as they can stand. You know, a doormat.
But the rest of the show, you know, it's just a regular show with Michelle, and she was very nice and all. She found out her brother coaches football at, I think she said, Oregon State.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And her father was, I think, a factory worker. And he saw they both went to, is it Cambridge?
Well, that's...
Do you know where she went to college?
Offhand, no, it was Ivy League. I thought she went to Harvard at some point or something.
Well, she did that, too.
No, Harvard's in Cambridge, Mass.
It's in what?
Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
Then there's Cambridge, England. I don't know if she went to school over there, too, or not.
No, I don't think it was in England. But then today, you know, The View is in Las Vegas. And they were talking about her again and how different her and Cindy were, Cindy McCain.
Yeah, because Cindy's a good American.
Yeah. And, of course, Elizabeth, you know, they said that it seemed like they said more about Michelle, against Michelle, you know, and how her having to explain herself, and than they did for Cindy. And of course, Elizabeth had to say, well, you know, she put herself out in the limelight and said all those things that offended people, so now she's having to put up with it, you know.
Yeah, but didn't Cindy McCain put herself out in the limelight with her ripped off oatmeal butterscotch cookies?
Oh, well, you know what? I saw her on there, and she said that guy was got canned that did it.
But so they've canned another guy for dummying up recipes for Cindy? That, you know, that's two now.
No, to put it out there that was family recipe.
Well, no, but there's been two incidents.
Well, that's all.
You know, the first one, the guy got busted for stealing from the Food Network. Well, just last week she put out her favorite cookie recipe.
No, she was on about a month ago.
Okay, well, she's been since busted again.
So they got fired at another one.
Yeah, she put the family circle or some such, asked the candidate spouses for their favorite cookie recipe. So, let's see, Bill Clinton sent one in and credited it to their cook, maybe the White House cook or something, and I guess it was real yummy. And Michelle Obama sent one in and credited it to their nanny or something like that. And yeah. Then Cindy McCain put one in and said they got it from a dear family friend. And it just happened to be virtually identical. Well, their dear family friend is apparently Milton Hershey, Juanita, because the oatmeal butterscotch cookie recipe that she submitted was almost word for word off of the Hershey website.
My goodness. Do you remember when they had a contest between Barbara Bush and Hillary about the chocolate chip cookies?
Yes, yes, yes.
And Hillary's was the best. People thought that surely Barbara would have the best ones. And Hillary actually had the best ones.
Barbara couldn't bake her way out of a wet paper bag. It's hard, you know, it's hard to bake when you're loaded on Xanax and then, you know, gin and tonics. That hateful old beast.
But I say that the View needs to get back to being a little more. They've really toned down since Joy said that about Preston Bush.
Well, who owns ABC?
Disney.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Disney, you can't swing a dead cat at Disney without hitting some right-wing acolyte. So
yeah.
There's no surprise.
Well, the guy that runs the show is Republican.
Oh,
the one that produces it.
There you go.
Uh-huh. Oh, that Barbara said that the other day. But they didn't win the Emmy. They can't understand why.
No, they can't understand why. Rachel Ray won an Emmy, didn't she?
Yes, she did. They have two new categories.
We are near the end of the world. You understand that? When Rachel Ray wins daytime Emmys, Armageddon cannot be far behind, Juanita. Because
don't care for her.
Rachel Ray is the Antichrist.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. You know, if she pulls back her well-coiffed hair, it's 666 right on the hairline. It's there. I've heard about it. Yeah. I mean, how could you possibly parlay a career involving a television show where you go around the world spending $40 a day and not leaving a tip? How can you parlay that into a worldwide media dominance conglomerate unless you're associated with the evil one?
I don't know.
Yeah, see what I mean? She's right.
Oh, and another thing I've noticed that they're having reruns of the Tim Russert funeral on C-SPAN.
Oh, tell me you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. And it was, you know where it was?
Where?
It was at the Kennedy Center. I don't know if that was the actual funeral or memorial service or what, but it was at the Kennedy Center.
If my neck didn't hurt too much to bend that far, I'd be banging my head into the desk by now. Honor guards, flags at half-mast, memorial services at the Kennedy Center. Sheesh.
Yeah.
For a talking head. They won't give those kind.
What are they gonna do with Rush when he goes?
Screw him into the dirt. He's too standing up because he's too crooked to. Well,
and you heard who's gonna take his place until the election's over?
Yes, Tom Brokaw.
Yeah. What do you think?
Based on an article I read in, I guess it was the New Yorker, about Keith Olbermann, I think it was the logical choice for NBC. Because they certainly couldn't have Olbermann moderating it because, he'd actually not
ask
be.
Real questions.
Yeah, he wouldn't be sloppy, soppy milk toast.
Yeah.
So Tom Brokaw can get in there on, Tom Brokaw, and let's say, we're going to be deferential to the presidential candidates.
Yeah.
It'll be putrid.
Huh?
It'll be putrid.
I'm not really into him. I don't know. I have these.
When Walter Cronkite finally goes to his long home, his reward, will Walter Cronkite get a week long orgy?
Oh, I know. That's the thing.
No.
I bet he won't.
No.
I bet he won't. But I didn't know. I don't know if it was originally on there, but the rerun is on there. On C-SPAN, for sure. Just go to C-SPAN if you want to watch it.
I won't. Let's don't and say I didn't.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I know.
Well, I guess I've said that. Oh, let me tell you something. I don't know what his motive is, but my son said to tell you hello.
Well, hey to your son. You don't have to say, yeah, Juanita, come on, you're overthinking things. You don't have to have a motive to say hi to Bob.
I know it.
All right, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening, dear.
You too, and you take care.
All right, thanks for the report.
You doing better?
I think so. I'm getting better. I'll get better. And, I'm really hoping that somehow or another I wind up back down to those size 34 Levi's. That's just my goal.
Yeah,
everybody needs a goal. That's mine.
Yeah.
My goal used to be to rule the world, but I have since significantly moderated my ambition.
No, it really gets good, but I ruled it.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. So instead of ruling the world, I'll settle for being able to fit into a pair of size 34 Levi's.
Okay.
All right. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Not gonna watch no rerun of no Tim Russert funeral. Ain't going to happen, ain't going to do it, and you can't make me. Okay, there we are. So we've done 2 hours of program. And if you want a chance to get your licks in, you've got about an hour to do it in. Your thoughts are more than welcome. I've got a big old stack we can work through. Either way is fine. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. We've got a temporary replacement website up, by the way. John Fox has worked like a wild man getting it back up and running. So headonradionetwork.com now has the most critical links there for getting into chat, for getting the stream, for contributing to the network, if you so choose. Since the website's been down, with the exception of a few subscriptions, things have gotten mighty thin around here. Just got that. Got the most recent. You have a delinquency on your bill from our T1 provider. It's not because we don't pay the bill. It's because we have to wait till we have the money to pay the bill. And that's kind of, how it goes around here. Lots of people will front money for in order to sponsor bishops for Randall Terry, so he can save the little wads of cells. But if you want to keep conversation radio going, if you want to keep something besides the typical squishy, mealy-mouthed palaver, if you want something besides that, you got to keep the horn going. We'll do what we do, as long as you make it known to us that it's what you continue to want. PayPal buttons are up. This is America's Liberal Voice. Crazy Danny, I'm a mission man.
He ran under the lake in just his socks and a shirt. Me and Crazy Janie was making love in the dirt, singing our birthday songs. Janie said it was time to go, so we closed our eyes and said goodbye to Gypsy Angel Row. Felt so right. Together we
begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
You guys are kind of quiet tonight. What, too much weekend? 5 minutes past the hour, and you leave me no recourse but to continue to rant my fool head off. Lucky for me, there's plenty to rant my fool head off about. You know that the Senate, including presumptive presidential candidate Barack Obama, have declared that they will cave, just like the House did, on the pig-licking-backed immunity deal for the telecoms. It will, I was reading over at WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, four, the number four, the number zero, WD40.com. I was reading over there today, just with this sort of typical, okay, I'm used to it sort of attitude of, and they call it the first Obama failure. Yeah. And I don't know quite what to do about this. Well, no, I do. Wait, time, stop. I do know what to do about this. I do know how I feel about this. And I'm not going to get into that self-censoring thing. No. I was one of those people, and I insist on holding myself to a standard of at least a semblance of consistency. I was one of those people who said that Hillary Clinton's vote for the authorization of force, you know, her vote for the war against the people of Iraq, was sort of a deal breaker for me, and it made me ashamed. And it put me off her. And I can't say that I'm okay. I can't say that I'm all right. I can't say that there's some way to gloss over the fact that Barack Obama announced he would support the Senate's cave-in to the Republican demands for telecom immunity. Not okay with it. This is not hopeful. This is not change. Okay? This is the same old, same old. This is the same poisonous crap that we've been dealing with out of this useless ersatz majority in the United States Senate for 2 years now. Don't see a filibuster coming. Don't see a filibuster likely. They got enough for a filibuster. One senator's enough for a filibuster. If there's only, yeah, Randall Perry was looking for 12 apostles. We're looking for one senator from the old school. Don't appear to be any. And it is disheartening, to say the least. Does that mean I'm not going to vote for him? Oh, I'm going to vote for him. But this just sort of takes me down a peg. Or takes him down a peg with me. We need a hero. And so there's Senator Barack Obama capitulating to the Republican minority in the Senate, and the Republican minority in the House already receiving their capitulation. And even as he does that, it is announced, saw this also over on WD40.com, our buddy Clyde posted it, the link says asshat, the same publisher that distributed the 2004 bestseller that took aim at John Kerry's Vietnam service is planning a summer release of a smear on Barack Obama. Conservative journalist, playing fast and loose with the language there. Not Clyde. This is out of the story. Conservative journalist David Fredosos. Why does he sound like he needs to be a character in The Lord of the Rings or something? You know, a hobbit gone bad. David Fredosos. The case against Barack Obama is going to offer what it calls, quote, a comprehensive factual look at Obama, according to, come on, everybody, Regnery Publishing. The subtitle, though, is what really shines the light. The unlikely rise and unexamined agenda of the media's favorite candidate. Marjorie Ross, the president and publisher of Regnery Publishing, said that the mainstream media has offered insufficient scrutiny of Obama and says that it's going to be a book in the same spirit as Unfit for Command, the swift-boating piece of filth and excrescence that was used to denigrate the otherwise, not otherwise, but the honorable service that John Kerry gave to his country at a time when George Bush and Dick Cheney were running as hard as they could to get away from Vietnam. It's going to be fun. Oh, by the way, I had an email today from someone who noted that they had recently received from a fundie one of those, you know, why you cannot vote for Barack Obama viral emails that's traveling the country. I think it's safe to say that our correspondent was rendered quite angry by it, to the point of writing back to the person who sent it to him and said, quit sending me this garbage. But there's another response to it. You know, our buddy Bart Kopp, Bart Kopp's been out there on the web since the web was little more than a single thread. And there's a link on his page today that says, who is Barack Obama? I'm going to share it with you. But you know what? It would sure be fun if we could muster the same kind of dedication to sending emails around as the right wing does. Because I'd love to see a winger. I'd love to see a real hardcore, did you know he's a Muslim and his mama was an atheist? One of those types. I'd love to see one of those types get this. This is just beautiful. Who is Barack Obama? There are many things people do not know about Barack Obama. It is every American's duty to read this message and pass it along to all their friends and loved ones. Barack Obama wears a flag pin at all times, even in the shower. Barack Obama says the Pledge of Allegiance every time he sees an American flag. He also ends every sentence by saying, with liberty and justice for all. Click here for video of Obama quietly mouthing the Pledge of Allegiance in his sleep. A tape exists of Michelle Obama saying the Pledge of Allegiance at a conference on patriotism. Every weekend, Barack and Michelle take their daughters hunting. Barack Obama is a patriotic American. He has one hand over his heart at all times. He occasionally switches when one arm gets tired, which is almost never because he is strong. Barack Obama has the Declaration of Independence tattooed on his stomach. It's upside down so he can read it while doing sit-ups, and he does 3,042 a day without cheating. There's only one artist on Barack Obama's iPod, Francis Scott Key. Barack Obama is a devout Christian. His favorite book is the Bible, which he has memorized. His name means he who loves Jesus in the ancient language of Aramaic. He is proud that Jesus was an American who spoke English. Barack Obama goes to church every morning. He goes to church every afternoon. He goes to church every evening. He is in church right now. Barack Obama's new airplane includes a conference room, a kitchen, and a megachurch. Barack Obama's skin is the color of American soil. Barack Obama buys American stuff. He owns a Ford, a baseball team, and a computer he built himself from American parts. He travels mostly by forklift. Barack Obama says that Americans cling to guns and religion because they are awesome. Go over to Bart Kopp. Click the link. It's got the little flashing hot thing by it. It's beautiful. Who is Barack Obama? Copy that and send it around to some to the wing nuts you know. If you listen very carefully on a very still night after you've sent it, and you just tilt your ear in the right direction and the wind is still, you might actually hear that wing nut's head exploding. And wouldn't that be a lovely, lovely sound? Yes, it would. Yes, it would. Because I, like the person who wrote to me earlier today, am sick to death of this. And you got it. You know, it's taken them a while to catch on to the inner tubes, but the right wingers finally have with the blood libel smear on Barack Obama that they're passing around, and it has proven effective. It's proven effective among a number of people. Another story from Clyde and Wally and Dookie and our pals at WD40.com. God, they. You know, between News Ninja Gene, News Ninja Susan, Blogger Betsy, and folks like Clyde and Wally and Dookie at WD40.com, my job gets very easy finding stuff. Washington Post article. Headline, 3 in 10 Americans admit to race bias. Hear that again, friends and neighbors. 3 in 10 Americans admit to race bias. We are still a long damn way from that place that Dr. King saw from a distance, where a man is judged not by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. A long way indeed. This is an article by John Cohen and Jennifer Agiesta, go figure. As Senator Barack Obama opens his campaign as the first African American on a major party presidential ticket, nearly half of all Americans say race relations in the country are in bad shape, and 3 in 10 acknowledge feelings of racial prejudice, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll. Lingering racial bias affects the public's assessments of the Democrat from Illinois, but offsetting advantages in Senator John McCain's age could be bigger factors in determining the next occupant of the White House. Overall, 51% call the current state of race relations excellent or good. What America do these people live? Oh, well, you know, Muffy, dear, come here. They're asking me questions on a survey. Look out over the wall of our gated community and see what you think the state of race relations is in America, would you please, darling? It's good. Oh, it's excellent. It's excellent. Yes. I think you're right. It is excellent. That fellow comes and mows our grass every 3 days. And, you know, he's not white like us. But he accepts the $1.75 an hour that we offer him. And I must say he does a lovely job. And our relations, our race relations are really quite good. So yes, I would, yes, Mr. Washington Post, ABC News person, I would have to say that race relations are excellent, excellent in America. On the other hand, more than 6 in 10 African Americans rate race relations as not so good or poor. Ask the young man who got his head put into the concrete wall what he thinks the state of race relations are in America. And as soon as he's done having his jaw wired shut, he might give you an answer. Just over half of whites in the new poll called Obama a risky choice for the White House, while two-thirds of whites said McCain is a safe pick. Two in every ten, 20% of Americans, one in five, you know, look around you, five people are, you know, when you're standing in a crowd, just me's one, two, three, four, five, two out of those other four think that he would overrepresent African Americans in the government. Yeah, really. Now, what overrepresent African Americans, interests of African Americans means? Well, yeah, okay, I speak the code. I know what the code sounds like. God knows the folks in the audience, of whom there are many, who are in fact themselves African American, know damned well what that means. 2 in 10 white people in America worry that Barack Obama would overrepresent the interests of African Americans. That's right. Yep. He's gonna make affirmative action mandatory. He's gonna give every welfare woman a Cadillac, just like Oprah. At least she had the decency to only offer Pontiacs, but I hear that Obama's gonna offer Cadillacs. Yes, sir, I know. Yeah, I know what the code sounds like, and it makes me sick at my stomach to contemplate it. But don't blame me. These are the people who are answering the Washington Post ABC News poll. Overrepresent the interests of African Americans. Most of the black folks I know, along with most of the white folks I know, They do share something in common. They are working people. And as working people, it's about damn time after 8 years of George W., 4 years of George H.W., 8 years of Reagan, with a little interregnum of Bill Clinton, it's about damn time that the interests of working people, black and white, got overrepresented in the government. And I mean it, overrepresented. Because you know what? Pendulums, it is in the nature of a pendulum to swing when pushed. And the pendulum has been pushed so far to the right and so far in favor of the Goldman Sachs and the Bear Stearns and I almost said Milton Bradley, Merrill Lynch types, those CEOs and the AIG and the Cignas and the Snake Farms and the All Snake and the Nation Snides, those CEOs, the pendulum has been pushed so far, and God knows the oil company executives, the pendulum has been pushed so far to the right for them that simple laws of physics demand that it swing back, and it will not stop in the middle, and it must swing. It must swing to the side of working America for a change. This is the newspaper article says, well, this is not the first time a Democratic candidate has faced such a challenge. Al Gore lost white voters by 12 points in 2000, and John Kerry lost them by 17 points in 2004. but it is a significantly larger shortfall than Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton encountered in their winning campaigns. About a fifth of whites said a candidate's race is important in determining their vote. Do you feel a little bit of the bitter taste of gall rising in the back of your throat, whether you're white or black, whether you're Asian, Hispanic, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, animist? Do you just feel that little sick tickle in the back of your throat that just makes you want to vomit to think that your country, our country, is made up 20% of people who think that a person's qualification to be involved in government has more to do with the pigmentation in his skin than the brains in his head or her head? Does it make you want to scream? Does it make... Or does it make you just want to throw your hands in the air and say, oh, screw it. Thus it always was, and thus it ever shall be. I'll acknowledge a little bit of that in my own spirit. This is how it is. This is how it's going to be. This is how it was. I'll acknowledge it, but then I will try to cast that demon out. Because it only ever shall be as long as we are willing. The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. There, okay? Good people. Gender specific. Oh, bull. It's okay to acknowledge that all this is very frustrating. It's okay to nod your head when you hear that clip of George Carlin saying, you know, this country is basically finished. And if it goes on as it is finished. And it does not help us when the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee throws in the towel in the Senate. And by the way, no word from Hillary on whether she's going to support it. So, you know, you hilarians who are still pissed off at Obama, let's check that vote. I don't understand how the Congress can be so filled with people who are supposed to know the Constitution who don't understand that they hold co-equal, not subordinate, but co-equal power with the executive, with the presidency. Congress has the right. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that the Congress shall compromise with the president. The Constitution says that Congress shall write the damn laws, and if the president likes it, he signs it, and if he doesn't, he vetoes it. There is inherent conflict designed into the Constitution. These compromise people, these appeasers, where the hell do they get the notion that they have to go along and get along with George Bush? Where do they get the notion that they have to go along and get along with the single most unpopular president in modern American history? Where does that come from? Come on, you know where it comes from. You know damned well where it comes from. It comes from the lobbyists. It comes from the guys with the golf outings and the nice meals and the good cars and the contributions to the political action committees. That's where it comes from. And it comes from the strong-arm tactics of the Bush administration. Sure it does. You know, if you look at the Congress subpoenaed Josh Bolten and Harriet Myers. The Bush administration put its middle finger in the air and said, make me. So instead of exercising its powers of inherent contempt and jailing the little bastards, they took it to court. Yes, they took it to court. Where the judge, a Bush appointee in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, listened to arguments and said, I don't know if I have any business in this. If you people wanted to hold them in contempt, you have inherent contempt powers. Why didn't you exercise them? This is none of my business. I'm going to upset the balance of power if I rule for the government or for the administration. I'm going to upset the balance of power if I rule for the Congress. So maybe I just won't rule at all and will let everything go down the toilet because the subpoenas become null and void at the end of this Congress and the seating of the next one in 2009. Hey, doesn't that make you feel good? I'm just going to run out the clock. And we're not even going to foul and send them to the charity stripe and make them at least take the free throws. We're going to let them just dribble around the court until the clock runs out. And George Bush is going to laugh all the way back, not to Crawford, probably to Paraguay or maybe Dubai. He's just going to laugh, and Dick Cheney is going to laugh, and Condi Rice is going to laugh, and all of those filthy, murderous thugs in the administration are going to giggle their hateful, blood-soaked heads off because the Congress didn't have the guts to stand up to them. The administration will have won the staring contest with one eye shut. And we wind up with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. Impeachment is off the table. Oh, that's weak tea. You know, Juanita mentioned Alan Colmes a little bit ago. You know what we've got in the form of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid? We have the political equivalent of Alan Colmes. A couple of people who have been called liberal enough that they're embarrassed by it and ashamed of it and scared of it and afraid that they're going to be called it again. So instead they get a really, really ugly case of Stockholm Syndrome and start identifying with the minority. The FISA wimp out, the FISA sellout, the FISA appeasement was achieved in the House of Representatives by 188 Republicans and 100 Democrats. 129 Democrats voted against it. 100 Democrats could not follow the lead of the majority of their party in the majority. And now the Senate's going to cave, too. I don't know about you, but that is mighty damn tough to swallow. Mighty tough to swallow. When we're out here working our butts off, and we give money, and we support campaigns, and $5 to move on, or this and that and the other, and won't you please help? America can't afford Republican dominance. You've already got the majority, and they're still dominating you, you bunch of weasels. What was that line I saw the other day? If con is the opposite of pro, then what is the opposite of progress? Hint, Congress. This is really, really, really hard to stomach. Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. Day after day, when the administration just says, "Bah, screw you, Nancy. Hey, Reid, come here, Reid, stick it." On Friday, George Bush claimed executive privilege to block subpoenas from the House Oversight Committee for EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. EPA documents on global warming. They were about to have a contempt vote for Stephen Johnson, the administrator of EPA, when George Bush said, "Privilege!" And the Congress said, "We're sorry." Henry Waxman worked up a little bit of anger. He said, "I don't think we've had a situation like this since Richard Nixon was president, when the president of the United States may have been involved in acting contrary to law, and evidence that would determine that question for Congress in exercising our oversight is being blocked by an assertion of executive privilege, I would hope and expect this administration would not be making this assertion without a valid basis for it, but to date I have not seen a valid instance of their executive privilege. Nor will you, Congressman Waxman. They're not in the valid excuse business. They're in the line in the sand, dare you to blink, dare you to knock the chip off of their shoulder business. And nobody's found the nerve to do that yet. And so, what about inherent contempt? Well, January's coming. You know, I mean, let's let bygones be bygones. Let's get a Democrat in the White House. Let's get a bigger majority in the Congress. Let's focus on what really matters. It stings, I tell you. It stings. Well, what are we going to do? I don't mean to be so negative, but what are we going to do? Oh, look, the House Judiciary Committee subcommittee is considering a subpoena for Douglas Feith. Because he refused to appear at the last minute to avoid testifying alongside Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, the former chief of staff to Colin Powell. Gerald Nadler of New York, a Democrat, said that Feith would be compelled to testify later. And so, tomorrow, the subcommittee will consider a resolution authorizing the issuance of a subpoena. Oh, Jesus. Maybe they can have a committee meet, another committee meet. Maybe they could form a sub-subcommittee about it. It's just, it takes a lot of stomach to get through this stuff. A new study out today, I'm guilty of this one. I talk about the occupation some, the Iraqupation, the need to get the hell out. But it doesn't lead every night. It bleeds, but it doesn't lead. Halfway into 2008, the ABC, CBS, and NBC evening network newscasts have shown a grand total combined of 181 weekday minutes of Iraq coverage compared with 1,157 for all of 2007. That's about 2 minutes of Iraq coverage per network per week. Oh, Lordy, if only they'd counted up the Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton, Miley Cyrus coverage, the shark attacks, and the, oh, Jesus. No, it's off the radar. What do we care? Oh, and apparently you remember the running bet that we have about when the attack on Iran comes? And I said second week of December. And let's see, I think our friend David in Tennessee picked Friday after Thanksgiving. Well, the guy with the porn mustache, John Bolton, showed up on phony news, you know, Fox, to declare when he thinks Israel will attack Iran. Yeah, just listen and weep.
Bolton, also a Fox contributor. Ambassador, thanks for being with us this morning.
Glad to be here.
Let me ask you first and foremost, what would Iran do if this attack were to take place?
Well, I think if Israel went after the Iranian nuclear weapons program, its various facilities, Iran's options are actually less broad than people think. They can't stop exporting oil, for example, and if they did launch conventional military retaliation against Israel, they'd have to worry about an even greater response from the Israelis. Another possibility that's been speculated about is they might increase attacks against American forces inside Iraq or Afghanistan. That's also very risky for the Iranians because we undoubtedly would not take that lying down.
We know that Syria would certainly side with Iran if it decided.
Yeah, we wouldn't take that lying down because we got lots more soldiers to send into Iraq in case the Iranians decide to pour across the border just to make our life a living hell. Well, we got tons of soldiers. We got unlimited, infinite soldiers. Oh, wait a minute. We don't.
To take action, but who else could it count on in the Mideast?
Well, I think they'd actually have very limited support from the Arab states. I think you wouldn't hear the Arab states say this publicly, but they would be delighted if the United States or Israel destroyed the Iranian nuclear weapons capability. They fear Iran in many respects just as we do. So you had the example last September of Israel destroying a North Korean reactor in Syria.
Huh? Yeah, just take that on faith. Sure. Yeah, that's what it was. It was a North Korean reactor in Syria, despite the dummied up photographs. And yeah, you betcha.
And the reaction in the Arab world was very, very muted because they saw Syria as an agent of Iran, and they were quite happy that Israel took that reactor out.
That is.
Now wait. Here comes the prophecy part where not me. I don't. I never claim the credit. I give all the credit to my little magic eight ball that more times than not says, "Answer hazy, ask again later." But once in a while, comes up with a gem.
So interesting to look at it that way. I'm wondering, when you look at Israel, do you think they're working on a particular timeline?
Well, I think they're probably experimenting with different methods. I think if they are to do anything, the most likely period is after our election, but before the inauguration of the next.
Wow! The guy with the porn mustache, Michael Bolton, or John Bolton, says that it's going to be after the election but before the inauguration. Wow, what an inauguration present that would be for Barack Obama.
Hey, look here. It's January the 19th. Guess what just happened? That's right, the Israelis attacked Iran. Happy presidency, Barack.
I don't think they will do anything before our election because they don't want to affect it, and they'd have to make a judgment whether to go during the remainder of President Bush's term in office or wait for his successor.
Beautiful, just beautiful. And of course, this is a matter of talking points. So you've got Pornstache Bolton saying that, you know, it'll come after the elections but before the inauguration. In other words, a general rat to Barack Obama if he wins. And then you get William the Bloody Crystal, who is wrong about everything, but somehow or another might be right about this. Because you gotta, you know, the Bush never accused George Bush of playing fair or playing by the rules, okay? He just doesn't. So, yeah, the William Crystal here, appearing once again on their mouthpiece, their outlet, Fox, talking to Chris Wallace.
I want to go back to President Bush, though. The core of the Bush doctrine, as stated in, I guess it was his 2002 State of the Union speech, is we will not allow the world's most dangerous regimes to get their hands on the world's most dangerous weapons. Why would Mr. Bush leave office, allowing Iran to go full speed ahead on its nuclear program, and leave it up to the next president, especially if that president is Barack Obama?
I think what the president would say is that he's going to leave the next president a strong diplomatic coalition with three UN Security Council resolutions behind it, saying Iran cannot have, that Iran's nuclear program is not legitimate, it's not a peaceful nuclear program, with sanctions, and depending on how fast you believe the Iranian program is going, with the next president having the opportunity to then take military action if possible. And I think, honestly, if the president thought John McCain were going to be the next president, he would think it more appropriate to let the next president make that decision than do it on his way out. I do wonder, with Senator Obama, if President Bush thinks Senator Obama is going to win, does he somehow think that does he worry that Obama won't follow through on that policy, which is not just a Bush policy. You know, it's a policy of the U.N. Security Council.
So you're suggesting that he might, in fact, if Obama is going to win the election, either before or after the election, launch a military strike?
I don't know. I mean, I think he would worry about it. On the other hand, you can't. It's hard to make foreign policy based on guesses about election results. I think Israel is worried, though. I mean, what signal goes to Ahmadinejad if Obama wins on a platform of unconditional negotiations and with an obvious reluctance to even talk about using military force? And that's one of the ways in which electing someone like Obama, and people are free to be for him for a million reasons, but it's just factually true that electing someone like him with the program, with the policies he's articulated, I think increases the risk of enemies testing him in his first months in office and allies being worried that he'll be too weak. It's not just Israel using nuclear using force against Iran. What does Saudi Arabia and Egypt think if they listen to Obama? Don't they have a temptation to think, gee, maybe we could use nuclear weapons if Obama becomes president? So I think Obama, actually, from the point of view of the national interest, has some obligation, I think, to make clear that he will be tough on Iran and tough in some areas of the world. Otherwise, he increases the risk of other nations doing things we might not want them to do.
Honest to God, what is the difference between what you just heard from William Crystal? What is the difference between that strung together bunch of just insanity? What is the difference between that and Mr. Crystal, well, do you actually think George Bush would bomb Iran after the election? Twas brilliant in the slithy tubs, did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the jub-jub bird and shun the frumious bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand, long time the manxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came. One, two, and through the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. Oh, frabjous day, Kaloo-Kalay, he chortled in his joy. Oh, 'twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. Oh, mimsy were the borogoves and the mome raths outgrabe.
Well, William Crystal, thank you very much for that expert analysis.
It's nonsense. But it's nonsense with a purpose. That's not aimed toward Democrats. Most of us, except for, you know, some of the pissed off hilarians, don't watch Fox. But supposedly independents do, and Republicans do. Republicans who don't even like John McCain and might actually find a credible reason for voting for Barack Obama do. So without saying so, William Crystal has just said to so-called independents or middle-of-the-roaders or people who haven't made up their mind, you know, those people who really have no business with a vote when you get right down to it, because if you can't decide between John McCain and Barack Obama, like, right flipping now, you're a little short in the brains department. What he's saying to them is, listen, I realize you've been thinking about Obama. You heard that part, you know, and there's a million reasons for voting for Obama. But I think that people really have to look at his policy positions. He hasn't come out and said he's going to go kiss, you know, Ahmadinejad's foot or anything. In fact, when he went and bowed and scraped before AIPAC, he said precisely the converse. That he believed in a position of strength and all, you know, forever defending Israel. His position was actually stronger than John McCain's on it, because the Israelis are not made stronger by war in that region. They're made more insecure. And they know it. They know it damn well. But that's okay, because William Crystal looks at it without naming him, without being over the top or you know, getting really the ham-fisted about it. He's able to say, listen, you might want to vote for Obama because you're sick of the war. because you're tired of the carnage and the bloodshed and what it's done to the American economy. But I got to tell you, I know these people. I'm one of these people. And if Obama gets elected, that's probably going to make the Israelis and or George Bush go ahead and attack Iran before he gets in because he's such a sissy man. He wants to sit down and talk. He wants to have negotiations. Never mind the fact that the high and mighty type after military high and mighty type, both retired and active, have developed this thing where they keep coming out and saying, you know, negotiations ain't such a bad idea. Time and time again. And it's been happening with greater frequency, so they have to battle back against this. And that's what that was. Sickening as it is. You know, here is Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen, who said in an interview with the National Journal that came out on Saturday the 21st, he answered the question, given Iran's role as a spoiler in the region and with so much now at stake for the United States, doesn't it make sense to directly engage with Iran to discern its motives and explore potential accommodations? And Admiral Mullen said, wait for it. I would like to have a healthy dialogue with Iran, but many different administrations over a period of decades have been unable to achieve that. But I do think engagement would offer an opportunity, certainly, to understand each other better. That said, the Iranians have to want to talk, too. It can't just be a desire on our part, and the Iranians haven't shown much propensity for dialogue. Well, they, of course not. Any dialogue they have with the United States right now is going to involve, it's going to be a one-sided conversation with a madman on the other side. I mean, can you imagine, you know, much has been done to paint Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as a crazy man. He doesn't have the power in Iran. The Ayatollahs and the Mullahs and the noble exalted pishposhes have the power in Iran. But we've worked really hard to make him sound like he's just crazy. And, you know, he spews the usual hateful, the miserable rhetoric against Israel. It's like the secret password in the lodge over there. You kind of have to. But the man's a trained engineer. He's not, and engineering doesn't work on faith. It works on science and mathematics and very hard and fast rules. And so he would be, even though we've painted him as crazy, if the Iranians sat down across the table from us, the crazy people would be us. The crazy people, the certifiably, violently, criminally insane people at the table would be us for as long as George Bush is in office. Our foreign policy in the form of the presidency is headed by a man who admitted to having stuffed M-80s up the butts of frogs when he was a kid because it was fun to watch the frogs explode and the little frog guts go flying, okay? That's evidence of psychopathy. Sociopathy, which is by definition crazy. So maybe they would be more willing to talk if a not insane person was actually occupying the White House. That's, you know, that's my argument, my counter argument to William Crystal's bit of blithering idiocy with regard to why independent, you know, you hate the war. Well, you know, we'll have war if Barack Obama's elected president because George Bush will see to it. The only hope for not having a war another war, not a war, another war, a third war, not a second, but a third war started by us. And without the resources to pull it off, even if it was right to do in the first place, the only way to stop that is to put Barack Obama in the White House. That's the only hope. That's the only chance. That's the only gambler's chance. John McCain in the White House means that there will at some point be bombs falling over Tehran and Natanz and Bushehr. A lot of hard work coming. A lot of hard work. Oh, and one last thing before we knock off for the night. You remember what, the week and a half ago, maybe it was last, when the latest Guantanamo, Guantanamo concentration camp prisoner case came out of the Supreme Court, and the fat Tony Scalia said the decision would, his words, would almost certainly cause more Americans to be killed, and said, at least 30 of those prisoners hitherto released from Guantanamo Bay have returned to the battlefield. Remember when he said that? Well, you're not surprised, and I'm not surprised, we're not surprised, ain't nobody surprised who's got a half a brain in their head, that it turns out that fat Tony Scalia is an unmitigated liar. See, I don't use the wimpy, the soft soap words. He's misspoke, he exaggerated. No, he's a liar. A dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking liar. How do I know this? Because some law school professor types and students and so forth at Seton Hall University read that quote, all about, you know, at least 30 of those prisoners hitherto released from Guantanamo Bay have returned to the battlefield. They read that. They thought, interesting. Usually when Supreme Court justices write things, they hang citations on them. They can't say, hello, my name is Fat Tony, without putting a footnote on it and a citation to another case that proves that, it's. So they investigated. And they came out with a report, Seton Hall did. What did they say? Well, here's the long and the short of it, because they use the pretty language that I don't use. Justice Scalia's claim of 30 recidivist detainees is belied by all reliable data. In other words, Fat Tony Scalia, the Supreme Court justice, is a lion sack of poopy. Despite being repeatedly debunked, this statement has been reflexively accepted as true by members of Congress and much of the American public. Justice Scalia is only the most recent disseminator of an urban legend that refuses to die. Scalia's source was a year-old Senate minority report, which in turn was based on misinformation provided by the Department of Defense. Justice Scalia's reliance on these sources would have been more justifiable had the urban legend he perpetuated not been, one would have thought, permanently interred by later developments, including a 2007 Department of Defense press release and hearings before the House Foreign Relations Committee less than 2 weeks before Justice Scalia's dissent was released. He's a lying sack of crap. God, if only there was a little bit of sex and a blue dress involved, maybe we could have some hearings about the lying sack of crap that Fat Tony Scalia is. But we'll stop there, okay? That's enough for a Monday night. You guys were awfully quiet tonight. On his way, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Peter Godbold, and Strictly Confidential. Looks like a Just Us program tonight, and I think you're going to enjoy it. I love the Just Us programs when I'm sitting back here, producing. Thank you, everyone, for participating with your emails, with your ears, with your time, with your bandwidth, with your thoughts, with your in the chat room, everything. Thank you. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can be a part of the solution to the nightmare that is mountaintop removal by doing something as simple as joining Coal River Mountain Watch and being up and letting them know that no matter where you are, you stand shoulder to shoulder with them in the attempt to save all of us, because we are all downstream. Thanks to John Fox for all of his hard work getting some sort of a website up and going. He's been going crazy. This is amazing, hellacious hard work he's put in. But there is a website back up at headonradionetwork.com. Visit, drop by. It'll get better. It'll get back to where it normally was. Remember, please, I hate to do this, but remember, please, that this is, in fact, listener-supported radio. Sorry, but we don't have any Preparation H commercials or Buy Gold Now spots or anything like that to keep us going. We stay going because you choose to help. And frankly, even if you wanted to, you couldn't help for the last week and a half or so, because the website's been down. There have been no PayPal buttons. Buttons are back up. Please help. We are far, far behind for the month of June. And I hate getting those little notes from our providers saying, you know, you've got a delinquency. Drives Wayne crazy. So if this is valuable to you, we implore you, especially if you have never contributed to the Horn before, to please join in the fight to make independent conversation a continuing reality on the Internet, where we still have a modicum of freedom. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.